the ODAC podcast.
I think it just gave our kids a little bit of a taste, and it really helped them in the offseason say, hey, these are the things we've got to do to get better. So when we go play and it's win or go home, you've got to step up, you've got to show up and play your best softball.
In the past, you're always looking and you're saying, golly, you know, we're just lacking this, or we're just lacking that, and we're lacking a guard, we're lacking a post, and, you know, of taking us where we need to go. And this year, you know, it seems like we finally have what we need.
The partnership that we have with the ODAC is probably the thing I am most passionate about. I work on a number of different events and partnerships throughout the year, but as someone who is a former NCAA athlete, the opportunity to give student athletes today the chance to get involved and be impacted by Special Olympics the way that I have is something that's really near and dear to my heart.
Well, we were extremely excited to win the conference championship last weekend. It's something we've been really striving for since following Toronto last season. And something that, really was our main goal all year long. We wanted to win back the ODAC, and then really nothing else compared to that goal all season.
The ODAC podcast is brought to you by Farm Bureau Insurance and Stellar One Bank. And here are your hosts, Brad Bankston and J.J. Nekoloff. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the ODAC podcast. This is J.J. Nekoloff, joined from afar by Brad Bankston as he's off on conference business. Brad, we're going to focus this call completely on football, as we've got the Stag Bowl getting ready to come to town in just 8 days for the 21st straight year.
A lot of exciting things going on with the championships, JJ, as we get started to embark on the week of the Stag Bowl for us. And weekend trips this weekend to the semifinals, which have really become an annual trek for us to not only welcome those who are making it to the Stag Bowl, but get the chance to continue to kind of have our hands in the Division III football world. Of course, for me, it's a little different coming off the committee last year, and this being my first year without actually having any committee duties with the football championship for the last 4 years. It's been quite a change and a different fall for me, but I've had a great time following the championship up to this point.
Well, three of the items that have not changed leading into the semifinals coming up this weekend are three of the teams. Mountain Union is hosting one semifinal, and they are hosting the newcomer, being North Central College out of Illinois. And then the other semifinal, which the one that you and Kerry Harvey Cutter will be attending, will be down in Austin, Texas, actually in Belton, Texas, with Mary Hardin Baylor hosting UW-Whitewater, and those two squads have also made trips to Salem in the past, with Mary Hardin Baylor, I believe, coming in 2004, and Whitewater, you know, facing Mount Union seven straight times before they didn't make the playoffs last year.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Of course, a Whitewater team that hadn't made the playoffs, didn't make the playoffs last year, but it had such a run, and Lance Leipold and his group have gotten things regrouped there, certainly, and are poised for a great football game, I'm sure, in Texas, as well as the game that you'll have a chance to see in Alliance, Ohio, which I think may be a fantastic football game between, you know, the perennial powerhouse in Mount Union and North Central, as you mentioned, the newcomer. At the same time, they've kind of they've circled the semifinals, quarterfinals in Division III football, and have been a player. They haven't had a chance to advance to the championship, certainly, and make it into the semifinals very often, if ever. And I haven't gone back to actually look at that, but they seem to be a very strong football team, gelling at the right time, having defeated a Bethel team last week handily in the quarterfinals, which a Bethel team, I think, many people thought would certainly be and were one of the top four teams entering into the playoff bracket.
Well, one of the benefits that we have in the conference, not only of hosting the game, is getting to work closely with the gentleman at D3Football.com, and one of those people is Keith McMillan, former Randolph-Macon College defensive back, and now the night NFL editor for the Washington Post, but he's also an editor for D3Football.com, and he's joined us the last couple of years, and again joins us today to benchmark not only the semifinals coming up this weekend, but to kind of look back at the rest of the tournament and also talk about some of the Gagliardi finalists that we have coming up here for the overall Division III Football Player of the Year. So it's always interesting to be able to get his take on what we see, especially not only from his perspective as a columnist for D3Football.com, but also as a former player, and especially here in the conference. So let's listen to what Keith had to say on his interview with us talking about the upcoming Stag Bowl.
When did insurance companies start emailing handshakes? Why is a billboard the only place you see your agent's face? Who decided you can't have good rates and good coverage? If you're questioning your insurance options, get real answers from a real person with a Farm Bureau Insurance Membership Advantage review. It's simple, quick, and tailored just for you. Get the Membership Advantage. Get Farm Bureau Insurance.
Joined by Keith McMillan, a columnist and editor for D3Football.com, as well as the Knight NFL editor for the Washington Post. And Keith, we've done this for the last couple of years, and you've been gracious to lend us some of your busy time, especially this time of the year with the NFL getting closer and closer to the playoffs coming up. But to give us your time and benchmark not only the playoffs as a whole, but the semifinals that we have coming up in preparation for the Stag Bowl. But I want to start off with a little bit of an ODAC slant on this one, as we had a Hampton-Sydney squad that went two games deep into the tournament this year and almost pulled an upset of the number two team in the country in Linfield, out in Linfield. Talk a little bit about what you saw from the ODAC this year and finish off with that Hampton-Sydney team in the playoffs.
Well, it was certainly nice to see the ODAC get a win in the postseason. It's been a few years, but I thought the second game, the one they ended up not winning, was almost as impressive as the first one. Because just the way they went out there and took Linfield by storm, and I think that's probably, it wasn't that surprising. I thought they would put some points up because the first time you see Marty Favre's offense, and because they had a quarterback in Nance Nash, who's not just a big arm, but a guy who likes to tuck it and run, and he's a playmaker. He had Holden Walker to throw to. I mean, it was quite an offense, and so it wasn't a surprise that they put up points, but I was certainly impressed that they went out there and took a 21-3 lead on Linfield, and that was a team that played good defense most of the season. So it was maybe a badge of honor might be a way to say it, across the nation for the ODAC. It's been several years since any of our conference teams have had a real significant presence in the postseason, and I thought getting the first round game against Maryville was nice, but going out to Linfield and showing that the ODAC plays pretty good football was pretty impressive.
Keith, I would agree with you that it was a nice showing for us to be able to have that home game, certainly the first week, and of course that was a shootout from that perspective with Hampton-Sydney winning, and I guess following up, you had the opportunity to maybe follow a little bit about the conference this year. Were there any surprises from your perspective? I mean, was Hampton-Sydney the best team to advance? I mean, the Randolph-Macon Hampton-Sydney game was a great game. Of course, it always is a great game. And, never shy of a bit of drama to make it to the end of the game to have a Hail Mary after the play clock and the game clock were a second off. I mean, what was your take from the conference in general?
I think it solidified its reputation as probably the most balanced conference. There's no other conference across D3, and I follow all 29 of them, that the last or seventh, sixth place team can beat the first place team, and then that first place team can turn around and go win a game in the postseason. And, I watched the second half of the Shenandoah-Hampton-Sydney game where Shenandoah came back and won that game 36-35, and they looked like they belong on the field with the team that won the championship and went out to Linfield and took a 21-3 lead in the first half. So most conferences have a doormat, have a team that, or maybe two or three teams where they kind of, the good team in the conference circles that team on the schedule and says, well, we're going to win this week. And I think that every coach says, hey, it's, what's the cliche they always say? Every week it's tough in this conference. Well, the ODAC really lives by it. And I watched a bunch of games this season that came down to the final minute. Bridgewater and Randolph-Macon. Randolph-Macon had those teams went back and forth in the final minute. There were low scoring games that were big games early in the season where it was like Guilford and WNL. And each team kind of has its own identity and style, which I think is pretty cool too. You have the high powered, the high flying offense, I guess, of Hampton-Sydney. You have the option game that WNL runs. You have kind of the old school double tight end, eye backs from Randolph-Macon. So I think it's a real fun league to follow. And it sometimes doesn't lend itself to the
having a team that will go very deep into the postseason, but I don't know if anybody around the country has a more exciting regular season week to week at all eight sites around, you know, only four games going on at once. But, I mean, all, you know, wherever anybody's playing, those games could be in doubt, and that's a lot of fun.
I would agree with you. I think the interesting piece of it is that, you know, when you look back, it's pretty difficult to kind of put your hands around, you know, that pivotal game. We used to have that, and we don't have that anymore. We've got a lot of games that are really up for grabs, and I would agree with you that the parity has been a good thing, or at least from our office, it always appears to be a good thing. But you know, sometimes I think the coaches would like to have that one team that kind of carried our banner into the NCAA tournament and gone to go a number of weeks deep. But you know, maybe we'll get there again. That's been a number of years since Bridgewater made those runs.
Yeah, and it's a different conference than it was then, because not long after that, almost everybody turned over their coaches, and now you have a lot of coaches who are they have the backing of their administration. They're secure in their positions. They recruit the state well, or you know, for Guilford, obviously they recruit a little differently. Every Henry recruits a little differently, and but mostly it's teams going after similar type of players, and they all bring in similar type of talent, and it really does make for a competitive conference. And I think the cool thing about that is, you said that we end up not having the one game, I guess, on the schedule. You know, maybe you don't have the easy game, but you still have the big weeks. You know, the fact that it came, the conference title came down to the game, where, Brad, I was not too far behind you, behind the fence. You're standing on the field for the to see that 2-point play, that Kansas City stop that Shaquem Randolph making from winning the conference, and I was behind the fence. I wasn't working that day. I was cheering as a fan, and I mean, to have it, even though my alma mater is on the losing end, I didn't have any problem with the call. I didn't have any problem with the way they played that game, with the way it ended. I, you know, went away from that crowd, and I think there are probably a good bunch of alumni of the schools in the ODAC and stand back and say, hey, I'm proud of our football team. I'm proud of our football program.
I think there are a lot of alumni across the country as we switch gears to the NCAA tournament that can say that about their programs as well. As we've had 32 from the start in the bracket, and we're down to the final four, if you will, coming up this weekend here with North Central at Mount Union, and then with UW-Whitewater heading down to Mary Hardin-Baylor in Texas. Talk a little bit about what your thoughts were initially when the bracket came out, maybe a surprise or two that, or a snub or two that you thought came out from that, and kind of lead us into the weekend that we have coming up here.
Well, I thought it was a really solid bracket. I like that over the past few seasons, the teams mix up a little bit more than we used to, so it's not just teams coming from one part of the country and only playing teams from that part of the country. You know, the fact that Wesley could be in the same bracket as Mount Union, or I'm sure there's better examples than that, but I thought it lent itself to having really good second round and third round games, and sometimes those games, they aren't always super competitive, but they're compelling. You know, even the first round matchup, St. John Fisher and John Carroll, or games like that where you would never see that game during the regular season, but it ends up being a real compelling game to watch from afar. And I think that's what's a lot of fun about the D3 playoffs. And of course, the fact that everybody who's in it earns it, and you have to go through four really good teams to get to Salem.
Keith, what do you think about this matchup with North Central and Mount Union this weekend? JJ's going to have a chance to go up and see that when I'm heading down to Belton. But your thoughts about North Central? I mean, they've been in it. They've been kind of around it. They're certainly a program that people have been talking about. This should be a pretty good football game.
Yeah, and the thing is, they've been well-tested this season, playing four teams from the Wisconsin Conference, and then they play in the CCIW, which is one of the strongest conferences in the country, and then beating Bethel last week, the team from the MIAC. So everybody they've played except for their first-round opponent has been a team from one of the power conferences. So I think that bodes well for them in terms of when they get to Mount Union, they're not going to be blown off the field by the talent level. And I think the thing that's exciting about them, I'm actually going to Alliance as well, so I'll see JJ up there. We may be in line for a shootout, at least if you judge by what we saw last week with Mount Union getting that big lead on Wesley and then having to go back and forth with Wesley to hang on and win 62-59. And then on the flip side, you have North Central
a team that, if you had to, if you're unfamiliar and you had to compare them to something you've seen maybe on national TV, I would compare them to the Oregon offense, or maybe what the Philadelphia Eagles are running right now with Chip Kelly, because it's that same type of, they don't huddle. They'll gladly run the ball if the defense gives them the run, and they'll gladly throw it if the pass is what's open. They don't have a set thing that they have to do. They take what's available. They throw screens. They run the ball up the middle. They throw deep. It's going to be a lot of fun. It'll be interesting to me to see if they can match Mount Union. Can they go up and down the field with them? Because I think as long as Kevin Burke is back there for Mount Union, they'll be able to put up some points.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I was curious, and you kind of touched on it there a little bit with what Wesley did to come back against Mount Union and really make that a close game, just being a three-point game. If you're the North Central coaches sitting there in their video room, what do you see on the tape that Wesley was able to exploit to make that kind of run and put up 600-plus yards of offense on Mount Union?
Yeah, I think some of it was definitely the margin that Mount Union got up so big, and they got up really easily the way they scored those points early. You know, they were big plays, and it wasn't like they had to drive, you know, 10, 12 play drives to score those touchdowns. They got up so easily. I think part of it was a letdown, and then part of it, too, is just Wesley's talent level. Even years when Wesley's not the most experienced, polished team, they always have some really good players, and I think some of it was just, you know, Jamar Baynard and Steve Cardoso and those guys getting down the field for big plays. So I would be concerned a little bit if I was Mount Union. Certainly that defense didn't represent itself well in the second half last week, but I think it could be an entirely different game this week. There's always the psyche of North Central playing in the semifinals for the first time, them going to Alliance for the first time. Are they going to be up for the challenge, or are they going to be able to have those jitters? They'll be on, you know, national webcast. It means anybody, your family can watch no matter where they are. People can come to the game, and it's not that far from the Chicago area to Alliance. It's not that close either. It's about 5-6 hours. But you know, there might be enough North Central fans there to make it a kind of a rowdy atmosphere for them. So I think that could be a real fun game, or it could be a game that gets out of hand early, just depending on how North Central responds to playing at Mount Union.
Now, if we slide to the second semifinal, the one to be played a little later in the day down in Texas, you've got two storylines really going here. You've got a UW-Whitewater team that didn't make the playoffs last year, yet now is sitting there with a 13-0 record going down to, on the road, down to Texas to Mary Hardin Baylor, going to a place where they've won twice before and where they've won the previous four matchups against UMHB. So is this year maybe the year that UW-Whitewater gets back to the Stag Bowl, or is it time for the Crew to get a win over the Warhawks?
I think that's what makes it so compelling, is that in this matchup, there's no team that hasn't been this far before, no team that'll be intimidated by the other team. Even though Whitewater plays in a huge, brand-new stadium, Whitewater's used to playing in front of big crowds because they have one of the bigger stadiums in D3. So all that stuff goes out the window, and it's sort of just about who plays a better game on Saturday, which team's tougher. And these are two of your more gritty, tough, fast defenses in the country. You know, Mary Hardin Baylor, nobody's been able to really establish the run against them, and that's what Whitewater likes to do. Whitewater, defensively, you know, when Linfield scored 17 points in the first half last week, that was the first time anybody had hit 17 on Whitewater all season. So they've been a team that's been propped up by a great defense, and now they're starting to see some playmakers emerge on offense. So they might throw the ball a little bit. And what I was reading this morning on the website on d3football.com was that Mary Hardin Baylor might play three different guys at quarterback. The main one being Zach Anderson, who's been the starter for most of the season, but he was relieved late in the game last week by Brian Gallagher. And then they mentioned a third name, Marcus Wimby, who they might use in the Wildcat. And I don't know if they just told us that to throw that thought in Brian Borland's mind, and have the Whitewater defense have to think about it, or do they really have guys that they can pull off the bench and make plays with? I feel like that game could be like a 17-13 or a 24-21 game, or it could be a real you know, exciting shootout. But I think it'll be close either way. I don't think those teams, there's a whole lot separating them.
Yeah, Keith, I don't know how much of the details you know about the Whitewater defense, but I was told today that there have been very few points, if any, that have been scored on them in the second half, during the course of the year. So my guess is they're making great adjustments in the locker room at halftime and have an opportunity to kind of come out and hold whatever lead it is, or the ability to be able to come back. And I guess you referenced the game last week with Linfield putting up their points for the most part in the first half, and of course Whitewater kind of taking care of business in the second half. Yeah, those second half adjustments were on display last week. One of the big one of the ways they were able to come back against Linfield was they were able to get pressure in the second half. Linfield passed for over 300 yards in the first half, but gave up 7 sacks in the second half. And I think a lot of that credit goes to Brian Borland, who's been the defensive coordinator going back to the Bob Berezovich days, and he stayed on board under Lance Leipold. He's been there for all the Stag Bowl appearances, so he's an experienced guy. But he also is better when he has defensive experience. And I know the guy that we'll talk about in a minute here, Cole Fox, in the middle for them. You know, he's another one in this run of great Whitewater linebackers. Every time they have a great team, they have either an outside linebacker or a middle linebacker who's a sideline guy, a guy who racks up the tackles and who they can send in on blitzes as well, and who makes plays no matter what you ask them to do.
Well, I'm going to put you on the spot here now. We've got these two games coming up this weekend. Who do you pick to be the winners this weekend to meet in Salem, and then who wins that contest in the 41st Amos Alonzo Stag Bowl on Friday the 20th?
Well, I've been batting this around for because we make our picks on Fridays for Triple Take, and my initial thought was North Central and Mary Martin Baylor, and then I thought I'm just wishing that maybe a little wishful thinking that we just see a new matchup in Salem. Even though every time there's a Mountain Union Whitewater matchup, it's a great game, and so there is excitement there, even though it's the same teams. I keep thinking about it, and I think Mountain Union's probably going to win their game. I think it's going to be hard to keep them off the board. They've over the course of the season, they've developed 3 pretty good receivers and a good running back to surround Kevin Berkwith, and he has a great offensive line. They shredded the John Carroll defense, which was the best defense in the country for much of the season. They scored 42 on them. So I think they'll be able to put up some points on North Central, and they'll probably win that game. I think I like Mary Martin Baylor in the other game. Playing at home is nice, and that one could go either way. And I think no matter what matchup we get, we'll have a good Stag Bowl. And I'd like to think I haven't even thought about who would win the Stag Bowl if Whitewater and Mountain Union played, or if Mountain Union and Mary Harden Baylor played. So I may have to pass on my Stag Bowl champion there, because I think you've got 4 teams in it that you could each envision winning it, and that's some more than others probably. It's a lot easier to envision Mountain Union winning again than North Central, but I don't think there's any team that's left in it that doesn't belong here, and I think that's a lot of fun at this point in the season.
Well, we'll give you a little ODAC favoritism in that one. I'll let you get away with not giving us your Stag Bowl pick. But then I will ask you about a little different thing that we have coming in, too, is part of what we've started to do with the NCAA championship over the last couple of years is the Gagliardi Award presentation for the overall Division III Football Player of the Year. And two of the 4 finalists that are left in the running could be playing in the Stag Bowl on the 20th. That is the quarterback from Mountain Union, Kevin Burke, and then also one of the linebackers for the UW-Whitewater defense, and Cole Klotz. Talk a little bit about maybe those two gentlemen, what they've meant to their squads.
Yeah, imagine that if you have a guy who, these two guys will be going against each other on Thursday in the presentation, and then possibly going against each other on Friday night in the game. I guess Wednesday is the presentation, and the game is Friday night. But that would be kind of cool, because the one thing about the Gagliardi Trophy that is not similar from other trophies people may be familiar with is that there's a fair shot for a defensive player to win it. We've had a tackle win it before. We've had safeties win it. So, of course, quarterbacks are favored, and if I had to pick a guy from the 4 finalists, I'd say Kevin Burke is a pretty safe bet. The thing I think I love about it is the way you guys have set up the presentation over the past few years, where you watch the montage, you get to know the guys a little bit, you have them interviewed on stage, and so even though there's only 1 winner, anybody who watches the presentation comes away from that night amazed at the quality of the 4 young men. And, when you think about it, the 10 Gagliardi Trophy finalists are the cream of the crop from about 20,000 players across the country on 244 teams. So everybody who's in it is obviously an outstanding guy and someone who's probably headed for a success in life. But I think getting to meet those four guys has really added a lot to the presentation. So there's always going to be a winner, just the guy who takes home the trophy. But I think everybody walks away feeling like a winner because you get to have you get to know them a little bit, and then those four guys get to have those relationships among each other. I can remember a couple years ago sitting with Michael Zweifel and Fritz Waldvogel afterward, and last year we talked with Scotty Williams' family, and he talked about how it was all kind of a, you know, he didn't start the season expecting any of that, and it was all a great surprise to him. So I think there's a sort of a, and it may sound a little cliche, but there's a sort of a friends and family element that comes with it too, and I think for anybody who watches, you get that element of getting to know the four guys and feeling like, I'm glad I support D3 because these are the kind of players that my teams are churning out.
Well, Keith, we certainly try to pride ourselves on the friends and family discount rate in Salem for those of you who have been with us for a number of years and privileged to be able to host the Stag Bowl. And as you know, something the city and the conference are extremely proud of, and happy to find out that we're going to be able to do it for a number of years after this year as well. So we look forward to welcoming you to Salem when you're able to make it. And sorry that you're not going to be able to kind of, you know, say those welcomes to the Gilardi finalists, but we know that you've got your hands full with RG3 and Shanahan.
Yeah, it's busy up here in Washington, and I'll be watching the presentation from afar, and I'll be down there for the game on Friday. When I say I wouldn't miss the Stag Bowl, I mean it. I haven't missed one since 97, which was the last year I was a player, and I'm way far removed from actually being on the field. So it's kind of cool. It's become a part of my life to go to the Stag Bowl every year, kind of between it's like the season. I wrap the season up, and then it's Christmas right after that. It's part of my holidays, and I love it. I'm glad it's in Salem, and I'll be looking forward to seeing you guys. JJ, I'll see you this week, and Brad, I guess, won't be until we get down to Salem on Friday.
Looking forward to it, my friend. I want to thank you for joining us here, and we'll see you not only this weekend, but then down there in Salem.
All righty. Thanks for having me.
You had your game plan, and now today's economy changed the playing field and the players. Yes, it's a challenge, but that's never stopped you before. So when you're ready to start moving forward again, whether that's getting your savings back on track, stepping up to buy a home, or balancing your company's risk and return, we're ready to help. Because if you're going to win, you have to get back in the game. Stellar One. Let's move forward together.
Well, JJ, Keith brings a great perspective and certainly a huge knowledge base when it comes to Division III football. His time working with Pat Coleman and the crew there at Division3Football.com, and of course, playing in Division III, playing in the ODAC, and remembering those years and having an opportunity to kind of reflect back, I'm sure is refreshing for him each year as training camps start. But, you know, I would put Keith's knowledge of Division III football up against anybody in the country for his ability to be able to maybe not only prognosticate the winners or the losers of games, but also to be able to talk a little bit about the personnel as well as his reflections on our Gilardi finalists.
Well, the Stag Bowl is the final event of the fall season for, I believe, all collegiate sports, as we get to fully dive into the winter sports with men's and women's basketball heavy into action, indoor track and field just starting up, and women's swimming also into action for us. So any future podcasts that we have, we'll start to focus on those sports a little bit. Of course, we have the holiday season coming around, so the next podcast probably won't be until after the turn of the calendar. So for Brad Banks, and this is J.J. Nekloff, we wish you a happy holidays and hope to have you listening in to us again on the ODAC podcast after the turn of the year.